Hello, and welcome to What's Brewing, CISFA? What's Brewing, CISFA is a podcast produced for the California Community Colleges Student Financial Aid Administrators Association. I'm your host, Dennis Schrader. I serve as the 2020-2021 CISFA president. And I'm sorry to say our co-host Dana Yarbrough is tied up this morning with some stuff at home, so it'll just be me and you today. So with What's Brewing CISFA, we're going to hope to entertain and inform you today for about 30 minutes. And let's start the show. And just like that, welcome to another episode of What's Brewing CISFA. Let's start off with our first cup, everyone. I had to fill mine up extra tall today with some extra tea. As I said in the start, our co-host Dana will not be able to join us this morning. Slight flooding at the house to take care of. Hopefully she'll get that all taken care of because we have a great show planned for the end of the week also this coming week. But today, you just have me, and so we have a lot of news to go through. Because there's been a lot of new things going on in financial aid, in higher education, here as we are heading into, probably for most of us, this is the week of finals week for most of our students. As the following week, most of us will be probably taking vacation. We have the holidays coming up. And so with that going on, there's a number of things going on. Let's go through a couple news items out there for everyone. And then at the end of the show, I'm sure I'll have some I Dare You To stuff. Some favorite books off the shelf and such. So item number one, progress continues on the Next Gen FSA initiative. On December 6th, FSA, Federal Student Aid, released new and updated features in the My Student Aid mobile app. Originally launched in 2018, the My Student Aid mobile app allowed students to complete their FAFSA, manage their FSA ID, and once they're done with school, if they've had student loans, they can manage their student loans through the app. Now, the app has improved functionality and integrates the look and feel of the studentaid.gov website. If you didn't know, you know, we normally have always sent students off to FAFSA.gov to do their FAFSA. And then we would send them to other websites to manage their student loans, other websites to handle and create their federal student aid ID. Now we send everyone to studentaid.gov. So this mobile app of theirs, the My Student Aid mobile app, has really encompassed the look and feel of the studentaid.gov website. And there's also some new features coming too. The features focus on key customer tasks and account functions and is redesigned to offer students a more personalized experience, you know, with improved navigation and a streamlined approach to handling your business within the app. If you haven't looked at the My Student Aid mobile app lately, you're really missing out. You really should take a look at this. And for more information, check out the December 7th electronic announcement on the IFAP website. And I'll include a link in the show notes. The next item coming up in the news world, in case you missed it, the Federal Student Aid Annual Training Conference has come and gone. That was just a week ago for most people, or two. And for those who attended and for those who couldn't break away from their daily work, Federal Student Aid, the FSA people, have offered on-demand access to the conference program. This includes session materials, downloadable PowerPoint presentations, and more. There is one caveat, though, I found out, and you'll find this out too when you read all the notes online. If you did not register initially for the actual conference, but want access to any of the on-demand presentations, you need to register, and you can do that online. Don't worry. We're going to include a direct link for registration in the show notes. And for a summary of information about all of this, we'll have a link to the December 7th electronic announcement posted on the IFAP website. But yes, you can get all the materials. Just like me, I was a little too busy at my regular work to get away for the FSA conference. And I know some people may have had some technical issues along the way, But you can now get all those materials online. Now, I was going to say, Dana, I don't want to get rid of her, but I really never, ever want to see her leave the college, of course. But there's an interesting job posting coming from the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Post-Secondary Education for those who might look to travel and move. They are looking to fill two vacancies in their management and program analyst position in the office. The pay is pretty competitive, even for having to live in the Washington, D.C. area. The job responsibilities include developing Title IV student aid program regulations, policy, guidance, presentations, and more. If you are interested or know others who might be interested, because these would be key positions in the Office of Post-Secondary Education, and we always like to have good people who understand financial aid in those positions, we're going to have direct links to both jobs in the show notes. I read them both. They are very similar as far as the explanation, but because I assume it's two different openings in vacancies in the office, they've got two different listings. Now, you know, I've got quite a bit of books in my background here on my Zoom when people see me during meetings. And there are quite a few on financial aid, education, and specifically higher education. But in case I was looking to add to my backlog of reading, and there's always reasons to do that because I do like buying books, Forbes recently posted their list of the best higher education books of 2020. I think I may own some of these, but here are some of the books on the Forbes list. And again, they're wide-ranging beyond just financial aid for sure. So the first book is called The College Stress Test by Robert Zemsky, Susan Shaman, and Susan Campbell Baldridge. The book presents a stress test for estimating a college's financial health. The methodology uses IPEDS data, and that's IPEDS. And this is the data that every college that participates in federal Title IV financial aid programs sends annually, or it could be more often, I'm not really sure because I don't do it myself, to the federal government regarding their school. So it's like enrollment numbers, graduation numbers, amount of federal aid you have a process and sent to students. It's a lot of, it's not per student data, of course, it's very much aggregate data, but it's information the federal government collects to make sure we're doing what we're doing. And then whenever they publish stuff related to schools, as far as like graduation, transfer, acceptance rates, all those things, they have one set common data set. So using that methodology, using their data, they can kind of get an idea from that book whether or not those colleges are in good shape or not. And so it's a test that colleges can put themselves through. Probably not as critical with us public community colleges, but certainly something our private school friends probably could definitely use that book. So the College Stress Test is out there. Another book titled Unacceptable, Privilege, Deceit, and the Making of the College Admissions Scandal was written by Wall Street Journal reporters Melissa Korn and Jennifer Levitz, examines the Varsity Blues scandal and its kingpin, Rick Singer. If you haven't heard either about the Varsity Blues scandal or Rick Singer, you really need to either buy this book or look for it on TV. There was a really good special a number of nights ago, and it was either like a 2020 or Nightline or a Dateline NBC type of show that delves into this interesting world. Now, we know we work at community colleges. Most of the people listening out there, the California community colleges, are open enrollment. You should not have to pay anybody to help you get accepted at your local community college. But out there in the world where some people look at the exclusivity of certain highly selective universities, whether they be Ivy League, the Stanfords or the USCs of the world now, you know, they are very much into that highly selective world because it's based upon, again, how many students are applying and how many can get in. And so Varsity Blues was, I believe, the FBI name for their project to take down Rick Singer, who was, in a sense, allegedly, again, selling the ability for mostly high-end celebrities and financiers and others with the wherewithal to, in a sense, pay to get their children into these universities. We've had some pretty famous names attached to this scandal, so I've read a little bit about this book. I would suggest getting it. I think it would be very interesting to see what all went on. One last book to mention in this group from Forbes, Who Gets In and Why by Jeff Salingo. Salingo has select access to the admissions offices at three universities, Emory, Davidson, and the University of Washington. Here is where he learned how admissions decisions were made. Now, he's a veteran reporter in the higher education sector. I believe he's got some other books out there. So I think this book is probably worth reading if you want a near insider's view of admissions to our more prestigious and selective higher education institutions across the U.S. For more information on this whole list of books, and there were some other ones that were a little farther off topic that may not interest people in the community colleges, but certainly if you are in higher education, you may want to read. I'm going to have that link to the Forbes article in our show notes. Now, another thing is, I know Dana to be quite a reader too, because when she signs on in the morning with her Zoom, the first thing I see is her stack of books. And it's an interesting stack of books, that ones that I know that I've seen in her office when we were back on campus, others that we've talked about. But there's a book that hits close to home here. Even though it wasn't published, it was published by Harvard Education Press. I think this hits home to a lot of us here in L.A., Southern California, Northern California, all across the state. And here's the title of the book. I hope I get it right. The Chicana, Chicano, Chicon X Dream. Home, Resistance, and Educational Success. That's a full title. Written by Gilberto Conchas and Nancy Acevedo. Now, although not singularly focused on community colleges, the book does delve into the issues faced by Chicana, Chicano, and Chicon X students. I hope that's the right set of abbreviations. This is all about the types of issues faced in attending college and completing their academic programs. As quoted in the book, considering 43% of students in California community colleges identify as Latina, Latino, or Latinx, there are many factors that influence this group of students' academic success. It looks like this would be an interesting read for almost anyone working at a community college, because many of us, again, have a high percentage of students identifying as such. For more on this book and the interview style article, this was an article, actually, not a book. It's at Inside Higher Ed, and I'll give you a straight link in our show notes to the article. Now, we got a few more news items to go and a few other things to fill for the show, so we're going to take a small musical break so I can get a sip of my tea here, and then we'll continue on. And wow, just like that, we're right back. So let's go on. We got a few more news items to go through, and then we'll talk about some other things coming up this week. LAIST, which is a website, and that's LAIST.com, posted an article titled, The People and Stories Behind California's Community College Enrollment Drop. And this came out just last week. Noted in the article is the fact that enrollment drops at Southern California community colleges has ranged widely, from a 23% drop at Compton Community College to just about a 3% drop at LA City College. The reasons vary, but in many cases it comes down to students who are already vulnerable being or choosing to stop out or not start college during the coronavirus pandemic. The article quotes a variety of student voices, including a single mother of two who's been attending LA Valley College and was nearing the end of her program, but due to balancing life with her boys and working, she needed to take the semester off from school during that time, or during this time, I should say. Another student attending Glendale Community College talks about how online classes, quote, don't give me the same joy, unquote. So he's staying out this fall too. LAist is asking students who've suspended their studies to record videos, TikTok, etc., that speak to why they've stopped out. For more on this and to read the article, check out our show notes for a direct link to the LAist website. And then into our last news item, before I have to fill in a little bit. If that article wasn't depressing enough after you're done reading it, there was a similar article in the Los Angeles Times on their website that explored the changes in enrollments at all types of colleges in California, including community colleges, the Cal State universities, and the UC campuses. For some of our Cal States, enrollment is actually up and significantly, and this is at schools like Cal State Northridge, Fullerton, and San Diego State. Now, some of this change at the Cal States is due to the continuation of current students and an influx of transfer students. So, way to go, community colleges. We're getting the students in as we're losing them. Also, first-time freshman enrollment is down 6% system-wide. So, obviously, they did make up quite a bit of ground through transfers. And this is not depressing at all, but enrollment at the UCs for new first-time undergraduates appears to be actually up by 2.5% compared to fall 2019. Now, they say the rise is mostly from in-state students, while there's been a decline in non-residents. So, you know, out-of-state students or international students. And we know that if you've been reading the news at all in the last 6 months or so, certainly, we've had some impacts on international students across the U.S. as far as getting new students into our colleges. Check out the article linked in our show notes. Now, again, without my co-host here, we would not have all the banter, so we may have a short show today, but I definitely want to do a little bit of I Dare You To's and things like that. So to kick that off, let's have a little musical interlude again and get right into it. And boy, we're back so quickly here. I barely have time to swing around to my bookshelves. But I do have some I Dare You To's out there I want to give you, because it's that time of year where, you know, you might be buying for yourself as you're buying for others in your family and your friends for holiday presents, Christmas presents and such. And so... Like I said earlier in my rundown of the news, I do have quite a few books, so I just want to give you some ideas for tiny little reads, and I mean tiny little books, maybe about 50 pages at the most. There's a company called Encounter Books, and they have what they call their Encounter Broadside series of books, and they've got about 40 or so out there. The one I'm holding in my hand is a tiny little book called Freedom from Speech by Greg Lukianoff. He is part of the organization called FIRE, and that is the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education. You may have heard of these a little bit if you are into the free speech movement, and in particular, free speech on college campuses. And so this book kind of talks to that whole thing because... you know, some of our colleges are much better than others about ensuring that students faculty, staff, but in particular our students, have freedom of speech on campus. And this means going beyond having a free speech zone, you know, where that's the only space on campus that you can do it. But Greg Lukianoff here has written a tiny little book. These books tend to be about $6 online, and they are numbered. This is number 39. I don't own all 39, believe me. I've randomly picked through them to get a few for the house. So I'll just give you an idea here. Pull back a few more. Again, some of these, you know, are things like The Truth About Gun Control, Moore versus Krugman. And so this is Stephen Moore. He's an economist. He actually worked in the current president's administration, but he used to be on Wall Street Journal, either writing or on their TV programs that show up on the news. And then Paul Krugman, so that's a talk about economics. We have Government Unions, a book on that. And things about higher education and education are in there too. So these are the Encounter Broadsides. And again, they're numbered. They're about $6 a piece. Go out and buy a few, fill up your bookshelves. And again, they're really quick reads, but they give you a nice summary. And a lot of times the authors of these are kind of the leaders in their field. And they'll link to or tell you about other resources if you want to get deeper into things like gun control, understanding that, higher education, government unions. I mean, just a number of topics. They're not all specifically one-sided or the other, but at least it'll open up your mind on a small amount of, on a subject in a small way, hopefully. A couple other books that are out there that are interesting. One, I don't think I've talked about this, but Reader Come Home, The Reading Brain in a Digital World. The book by Marianne Wolfe. And on the front it says, author of Proust and the Squid. So I'm not sure what that book is either. But this is a very smart person. And so this book, Reader Come Home, I just finished reading a matter of days ago. I try to keep up on my reading. Is kind of a thought piece of hers on how the world has changed since we've gone to e-reading. We have so much more multitasking between devices. It's no longer just multitasking between pieces of paper. And how this really impacts our younger generations. You know, when do you introduce reading on a device to a child? How do you incorporate that to ensure that you still have deep reading that that child will do when needed? Because, again, you can't just be constantly looking at quick-running media in front of you or distracted by social media and things like that. We have to ensure that all generations still have those deep reading skills. And how do you ensure that in this modern world? So it's definitely a good read. I wish it was actually a longer book because it only took to the last few chapters to give some suggestions on how we move forward to ensure, you know, students ages five and younger, and then those are older than five, have good reading habits so that they're able to take in material and use it properly in their lives. Another book I bought seemed interesting. I think it's going to be, it's called The Psychology of Money, Timeless Lessons on Wealth, Greed, and Happiness by Morgan Housel. It's a new book, been out just recently, and basically on the back it tells you, doing well with money isn't necessarily about what you know. It's about how you behave. And behavior is hard to teach even to really smart people. So money, investing, personal finance, business decisions is typically taught as a math-based field where data and formulas tell us exactly what to do. But in the real world, people don't make financial decisions on a spreadsheet. They make them at the dinner table or in a meeting room where personal history, your own unique view of the world, ego, pride, marketing, and odd incentives are scrambled together. So this book kind of takes, shares some short stories exploring the strange ways people think about money and teaches you how to make better sense of your life on this important topic. So I think, again, it's not a super long read, but it is it's a very interesting topic. And considering we are in the middle of the holidays, I think it definitely would be worthwhile to read. So definitely get yourself that book. The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel. That's H-O-U-S-E-L. All right, as we are here at the end of the show, as always, I would like to thank you, our audience, for joining us here today. I know it's a little shorter than normal, but that's okay. I would like to hope and thank Dana and have her back with us on the Friday show. Let me just give you a quick rundown. Friday will be our kind of holiday wrap-up show of things. We're going to have some of our former interviewees coming back to the show on Friday, so definitely don't miss out. It might run a little longer to make up for today's show being just a little shorter than normal. So definitely hope you had a good time today. We'll have Dana back by Friday and so many more characters here on the show. Check out the CSFA website at CSFA.org. That's CCCSFAAA.org. And if you have something to say or you have topics you want us to discuss, email us at WBCSFA@gmail.com. For this and all What's Brewing CSFA podcasts, find our feed through Google Podcasts at podcast.google.com, or for those using Apple devices, open up your podcast app. To find us, just search for CSFA. You can also find our episodes at wbcsfa.podbean.com. That's pod and bean as one word. And you can find us on Spotify and Pandora now, everybody. I think you just have to find a way to type in CSFA or yell out to your device, please play the CSFA podcast. What's Brewing CSFA is a production of Studio 1051, a creative collaboration of myself and Dana. And this has been episode number 46, recorded the morning of Tuesday, December 15th, 2020. Everybody, have a great day and have a great week. We'll see you back on Friday.